From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
I missed live disc golf, Sarah. Did you miss live disc golf?
I did, so much so that I've watched almost every single minute of all of the covers this weekend.
I got in most of it as well. We will talk about the return of the Disc Golf Pro Tour today on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. That's Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, we've also got some big, important PDGA business this week. Noah Meintzma is going to stop by the show to talk about his performance at the DDO, as well as the upcoming Preserve Championship. But let's get to, real quick, the big thing that I want to pump to people. I'm going to hit you over the head with this for the next few weeks, people, so get used to it. This week, PDGA Board of Directors, Board of Directors elections begin. So you will get an email from a company called IntelliScan. Please keep an eye out for that. They will have your ballot with all of the 17 candidates for the Board of Directors, as well as a state coordinator if your region is up for one this year. Please be a Democratic citizen of the PDGA and vote.
Yes.
Right, Sarah?
I have not listened to them yet, but I totally plan to.
You better get on it, Sarah. There's 17 of them. Yeah. There's only 15 interviews.
Okay. What would you say is the average runtime for people, so they have an idea of what they're getting themselves into?
On the interview, like total, I'm not going to lie, it's about six hours of interviews.
It's going to be a lot of running or a very long car drive.
Yeah. Andrew Fish, shout out to Andrew Fish, who on Twitter said he was going to listen to them while he was practice putting.
Oh,
good
nice.
Call, Andrew. Appreciate it. Most of them run about 15 to 20 minutes. There are a couple people who are a little more verbose than they maybe needed to be. But, you know, between 15 and 25 minutes was about the run time on most of them. I did timestamp all this stuff. You can go to pdga.com. It's on the front page right now. It's our election special, or it should just be in your podcasting app. One thing I do, Sarah, I'm glad you kind of brought up the different interviews. I do want to provide a bit of a clarification. So in my interview with Will Schustrick, I asked him about this new PDGA bylaw that, basically, as it works, if Will Schustrick gets elected, he will essentially be limited to a 1-year term, because he is an owner of a company or employed by a company that provides equipment to the PDGA for, approval, for technical approval. And he, you know, we talked about that. And again, I would say he would be limited to a year if next year he was still employed by Prodigy. So, he kind of suggested, when I was asking him about this, he kind of suggested that, this bylaw could also then be limiting to board of directors candidates in the future, because it could apply to sponsored players, or it could apply to people who the PDGA is putting on committees. I would like to clarify that that is incorrect. This bylaw applies to just employees or owners of companies who submit products to the PDGA. So it would not limit a sponsored player. It would not limit someone from being on a PDGA committee. So I didn't have all the intel to be able to clarify that in that broadcast. So I wanted to clarify that now. That's not a knock on Will or anything. It was more of a, I think he was kind of spitballing about what the ramifications might be. But I received from some clarification that that would not be the case. So just a piece of information for everybody. You can listen to Will's interview as well as everybody else's interviews over at pdga.com. Thank you if you have tuned in, because it's kind of a lot. I'm not going to lie.
I'm surprised you still have a voice after all of that.
You'd be surprised, Sarah. I can, if you don't know me, you know I can talk. Well, that's the nice part. Like, they mostly do the talking. Most of the candidates just
very
do the
true,
talking.
Very true.
And speaking of other talking and podcasts, I will be going on a couple of podcasts this week. If you want to hear my voice any more than you already get to, I'm going to stop by probably Smashbox and The Upshot and the OTV podcast this week and try and pump up elections
nice.
A little bit more. So it's going to be wall to wall me. So Sarah, take it away. You talk a little more right now. What's What else we got on the agenda this week?
All right. We are talking about the Dynamic Disc Open. We opened the show with live disc golf. That's the event that we were referring to. You want to jump in or?
Oh, there's one more thing. We have a small social media, well, not a small social media campaign. I would like it to be a larger social media campaign. We want people to show their PDGA colors. Basically, this is a way to show off your PDGA stuff and, you know, help us spread the word about the PDGA and get some new people on board. So basically, if you go to our social media channels right now, you will see we've got a post up where we want you to take photos of your PDGA stuff. It can be your old member tags. It could be your card. It could be your old discs. There's some old, ugly PDGA stuff out there, and I want to see it. So we want you to use the hashtag PDGA colors, share those photos, and then what we're going to do is each week between now and the end of July, we're going to draw a winner. That winner is going to get a free membership through the end of 2021, and that person will also be given a membership to give to a brand new member. So that's kind of what we're, it's kind of a, you show off the PDGA and we get some new people on the board, on board with the, with membership. So help us out. It's hashtag PDGA colors on social media. Sarah, I know you were saying you and Sean have some relics you can show us, right?
Yeah, we've got, Sean has quite a few obelisks that he's been awarded over the years for, his service on the board and other things. And then I'm not sure if he's still got some of his old PDGA shirts, but he's got quite a few collar PDGA shirts. I became a member in 2009. Is that old? That's probably not old.
Dude, I mean, look, I've seen some of the old prints on like discs and things like that. And some of the stuff from 2009 looks like it's from 1988. So
there wasn't a whole lot of new branding happening back then, I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, if you've got it, people flaunt it and you can get your membership through 2021. So thanks for helping us out with that. And now, Sarah, let's get into the Dynamic Disc Open. Why don't we start on the FPO side where Paige Pierce really made it a nail biter?
Yeah. So there really wasn't, I mean, once Paige Pierce got started, she kind of just took off and made a statement as she does, and there wasn't a whole lot of stopping her. And she just looked, it looked like there had been no pause or off season 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. She just started back up her game with totally unshaken confidence, and just like off season 2.0 did not stop her whatsoever.
Yeah, she was in mid-season. She was in mid-season form. She, just for people who maybe haven't watched yet, she won by 10 strokes. She went into the final round up 12. And it's just like, I think she averaged 995 through the tournament. Started out with a 10-16. She's on a whole other level right now. And it's the crazy part is like, you know, and this isn't trying to disparage Paige at all, but she's not playing flawless golf either. No. Like she threw OB six times during the final round.
If you go on UDisc and just look at her scorecard, I mean, round three might be a little bit different because she did have such a lead.
A lot of wind.
Yeah. And there was a ton of wind. But her scorecard is, you know, there's some yellow, orange. I'm not sure what peach. It's more of a peach, I guess.
Yeah, it's a peach.
Lots
I like
and lots
that.
Of birdies, but also a couple, three actual double bogeys, quite a few OB strokes. But she's just able to, she's just not fazed by mistakes. Like she went seven on hole one, that's a double bogey, and then birdied. Par, par, birdie, birdie, birdie. It's just like she's one of those players that it doesn't seem like it fazes her too much when she does something really great or has a really bad hole. She kind of just brushes it off and seems to take every stroke individually. And that's what you got to do to have that kind of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. She's it was a pretty impressive performance. You know, let's stick on the FPO side. I know we're kind of getting back into our groove of, of pro coverage. So, you know, Sarah and I try and pick three kind of big things we want to talk about besides the main stories of the winners. So, Sarah, what else you got on the FPO side that you want to go
through? The other person that I was extremely impressed with, I wouldn't say surprised, because she has been kind of climbing her way up the leaderboard in recent events, but that's Missy Gannon, and she is the reigning world putting champion at the World Championships last year. And she's like, she got first in circle one putts. She was second in circle two putts, her second in birdies, second in scramble, second in parked. And like, I wouldn't say that she can really throw as far, obviously, as like Paige.
See, that's kind of funny, because her distance kind of surprised me. I actually thought she was throwing a little further than I recall her throwing.
Maybe
in the
past. True. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think of her as a really a distance thrower or like a power thrower. Yeah. And she's got a good little like touch forehand, but she mostly relies on her backhand, and she's not throwing any kind of like rollers or anything like that. But it's just her putting, like get her anywhere within like 40 feet. And it's like a no brainer for her.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I also think it's just interesting that she and Paige both transitioned to Discraft recently, and they're kind of supporting each other. And I know in that the interview that or the article that you wrote on the PDGA website, Steve, you mentioned that, or Paige mentioned that she's still getting comfortable and feeling more confident with her Discraft discs. And it really shows. And it seems like the two of them are probably just figuring it out together and maybe boosting each other's confidence. I think they're super close friends, and for them to be on a card together probably just helps each other mutually. So I think that's probably part of the reason they both did so well that third round. It was crazy, because the third round was pretty challenging for a lot of players. There's tons of OB. There's a good amount of elevation change. And then when you add like, what was it, like 95 degrees, super humid, and then super windy on top of that. I mean, your discs might feel different depending on the plastic, and you've just got all these other things to figure out. And I think I brought up wind last week of one of those things that players are going to have challenge with coming back from the second off season. But a couple of these women, it did not faze whatsoever. So
I'd be curious to see what kind of clicked for Missy between round one and round two. My guess, it's something like, I don't know if it's mental or physical, because she went from, you know, pretty rough putter performance round one, 67%, and then she was perfect the final two rounds. And obviously, three over par the first round, three under and four under. You know, so I think maybe she just got it out of her system. Maybe she went and hit the green after round one. I'd be curious to follow up with her on that, just because like, that's a pretty big shift to go from three over to shooting under and getting your total under for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, it could have
really strong performance.
It could have possibly just been like knocking the dust off. Like, this is the first competitive round that she's had, or that anybody's had, since we all were in quarantine. So maybe just getting comfortable with the discs again. She hasn't had all that many tournament rounds under her belt with Discraft. So just getting comfortable and building that confidence between the rounds, and knowing that she can do it. So yeah, I'm super excited to see where she goes from here, and seeing if she can give Paige Pierce a run for her money in the future. It'd be super exciting.
Oh man, we'll talk about that later and running her layup if anyone's gonna give Paige Pierce a run for her money. Yeah. All right, what else on the FPO?
The last thing that I have for the FPO side is I was extremely impressed with Andrea Eaton's finish. So she is from Wheat Ridge, Colorado, maybe a lesser known player. And she's only 894 rated. And she beat out quite a few top women. Kona, Panis, Ciotti, Erica Stinchcomb, Holly Finley, Rebecca Cox, and I got some insight from a friend that said that she would have finished solo. I guess she had a couple miscues on the last two holes, and she would have finished solo fifth, but she ended up tying for fifth with Cynthia Ricciotti. And if you just look at where her rating is compared to all the other players, like, she should have finished based on rating, which doesn't always matter. when it comes to this kind of stuff, but she should have finished like fourth from the bottom. If you were to sort by her rating. So I'm super impressed with that. And it looks like she's been playing since only 2017. And actually she is over 40 as well. So I'm seeing her kick butt. I'm very excited to see what else she does in the future.
Yeah. Good deal. It was interesting watching this tournament yesterday. We'll talk a little bit more on the broadcast in a little bit, but and it was weird. It ended up becoming like a battle for third, which is always kind of a bummer when you're watching it, because then you know that it's a little less dramatic. I don't want to gloss over Katrina Allen and Paige Hsu. They both had pretty strong performances with some, miscues here and there, Sarah. And I don't want to harp on it too much, but there were a few times where, we've talked about Katrina struggling on the putting green, and you could see that was happening. And I don't excuse that. Everyone has putting struggles, is going to happen, but there were a couple times where she missed one and then would miss the cleanup putt. Like, just pure lack of concentration. And I really hope that we see her clean that up, because it's just one of those things where, yeah, you're going to miss putts and we know it. And that changes the outcome and it changes the mental capacity. But then to just like be careless on the last cleanup portion of it is just like, it was tough to watch.
Yeah. I don't know where I try not to ask her. I try to be very sensitive after her good and not so good rounds. And I don't ask what was in your head when you missed that putt. But so
I don't think she wants to do it. Like
I'm just saying, I'm prefacing what I'm about to say with the fact that I have no idea what's in her brain when this happens, because we haven't talked about it. But I would think it's one of those things where you're just like, well, I should have this with my eyes closed. And so I'm not going to think like, I'm not going to put, yeah, it's like, I'm not going to put thought and time into this putt that I should have. And then it almost is like shocking when you don't make it. I have no idea where her brain is on it, but.
I hope we'll get to see a bounce back performance from her this week, going up to Minnesota, maybe some home area vibes will do her some good. I'm hoping, because again, like, she is just so damn talented off the tee.
Yeah,
like,
she was second in fairway hits.
Beautiful shots.
Second in fairway hits, second circle one, second circle two, third in birdie rate. Like, she's one of the few women that's throwing rollers out on this course. If she could just capitalize on the putting green, again, we would have some of those old Paige Cat battles for sure.
Yeah, I hope we get back to that. All right, on the MPO side, we had Paul McBeth. At first, looking like he was just going to run away with it, and then, man, it got dicey. He goes triple bogey on hole 8, a couple bogeys to follow up after that. Emerson Keith was putting the pressure on, a little Worlds throwback from last year. And then we had Calvin Heimberg just slaying on the chase card. Ultimately, McBeth was able to kind of buckle it down and do what he does and come out with the win. But it really reminded me of last year's GBO, where, again, McBeth had a pretty good lead and the wind kicked up in the final round and he shot a 2 over par and ended up with a 1-shot win. This year it was a 1 under par round, but still a 1-shot win. It was crazy, because I swear, like, he hits this 50-foot putt on hole 2, Sarah. I don't know if you were watching it at that point yesterday, but like, he's everybody else misses their putts and he just cans this 50-footer in the wind and you're like, all right, this is a ball game. There's no way they're going to catch the guy. And then they almost caught him. So I was ready to count everybody else out yesterday. I will eat that one. And I'm glad that we got some drama, because, man, it just made it so much fun. The thing that I really took the most away from this, though, as far as Paul McBeth, is that he's really, really good at making subtle adjustments off the tee that I don't know if the other players are seeing or as capable of doing. Like, his adjustments yesterday to keep the disc low and out of the wind was a demonstrable difference between the rest of the card, where he would throw something a little faster and a little bit lower and keep it under control and get it to, you know, skid out safely. And the other dudes on the card, you know, Ricky Wysocki, Emerson Keith, Kevin Jones, they'd be throwing something higher and it would get taken away like a kite. So just being able to make those adjustments to like flight angle, I thought was really important and helped him kind of stop the bleeding. And, you know, he did make some mistakes still and was just able to kind of overcome them. You know, it also shows how important his ability to just get out to a big lead is. Like, when everybody else has to play chase and he has those cushions, it's really, really kind of wild. Did you, you know, how much of the MPO did you watch, Sarah? I know, were you watching kind of how the battle all came together yesterday?
Yeah. I'd like to think that he was throwing those strokes away on purpose to cause a little drama.
You're not the only one who mentioned that.
Really?
I know my wife was like,
is he doing this?
Did Macbeth sponsor the CBS Sports thing? I was like, no.
Ooh,
I was like, no, they
as
didn't.
A marketing person, yeah.
But yeah, she had that thought. But hey, it, you know what? It did make for way better television and a lot more excitement. You know, Calvin Heimberg just absolutely not even caring about wind was disgusting.
My gosh. When he went for that putt on the island hole on 16, I was just like, his putting just looks so casual.
I wish, it looks so easy. And like, it's very unique and makes me jealous. I want to talk about a couple more little things here on the MPO side. Holes 8 and hole 8 and 9 through this tournament seem to be kind of the round ruiners. As I'm scrolling down the scorecard on UDisc Live, so many orange spaces on hole 8 and 9. You have Simon Lazat just getting smashed by those holes. People throwing up 7s, 8s. It's just so easy to go OB and then on hole 8 with that big downhill shot. And then hole 9 is like the most wooded hole on the course. And it's almost like this jarring, like, oh crap, I'm in the woods now kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's like a tunnel off the tee. And then it kind of loops around. Apparently my husband, Sean, is the one who recommended that change. So there's a couple changes from when I played that course for Worlds. What was that, 2015?
Oh, yeah, that hole didn't even exist during Worlds.
Right, it was totally
different.
Hole 9
is brand new it was new last year.
Okay, so the right side is inbound so that you have to kind of, like if you land in that shul over there.
Yeah, scramble.
Whew, it looks rough over there. And then you've got to pitch it out. And then to get into the woods, it's like a pretty small opening. And then it's hard to kind of judge on camera, but it looks like that green is also sloped. So lots of people are having issues on the putting green there.
Right.
Yeah, that was a fun hole to watch.
Yeah, I love it. And placement. it's kind of at this interesting time of the course. Like you got to think about that to do your back nine. And that's just crazy. Hole 8 was the fifth most difficult yesterday from UDisc stats. Hole 9, most difficult. Just always interesting to see which holes really kind of foul people up. Hole 17 and 16 also in the top 5 of difficulty, which not surprising. And then, you know, my final takeaway from this is, Sarah, like this is less about the competition and more about the product, but I felt that this was probably the Disc Golf Pro Tour and Disc Golf Network's best weekend of broadcasting that I've seen in quite some time. They had interviews queued up that they were playing. They had graphics and like flyover, you know, scoreboards. They started with, you know, getting some coverage on the chase card. They flipped to other cards occasionally. And then obviously the being able to have the drama yesterday, they were keeping an eye on Calvin Heimberg. They had a camera on him. They had cameras on the lead card with what Macbeth and those guys were doing. I thought it was very compelling. I thought it was very smooth. Obviously, they had a couple of those, you know, Blair Witch kind of moments with shaky camera, but that's going to happen. But I thought the broadcast was great. And the coolest thing, we're sitting there on YouTube yesterday and celebrity chef Andrew Zimmern hops in the chat.
Nice.
And was chopping it up with people and talking about the game and watching Macbeth and cheering on Heimberg. And he's from Minnesota. I hope that he's able to make it out to the Preserve this weekend if he's around. I know he's traveling a lot, but that was just really cool, man. Like, that's almost a bigger thing for disc golf than some of these other broadcasts and stuff that are going on. Like, having someone of that stature and that notoriety recognize the sport and interact with it is just huge.
For sure.
So that was really exciting. Sarah, I know you had some, we talked a little bit offline about the broadcast. What were your thoughts on it?
Overall, I mean, I love the interviews, just getting to see what the players have to say about their play right after the round. Albeit they were pretty sweaty, most of them.
that's how it happens. Yeah.
No, I mean, I've totally been there. I'm just thinking about like how uncomfortable I would be being on camera that sweaty, but when it's 95, can't really do anything about it. I would say the only note that I have is I do miss watching the women's full live round before the men's. And I think the way that they did it last year, I mean, there's got to be efficiency issues and filming things like that on the back end that I'm not seeing and that the viewers aren't seeing. So I know that the cameras want to stay on the MPO side when there's potentially going to be a playoff or the race is really tight. But I don't know. I guess because I'm more interested in the women's field because I'm part of the pro women's field and because I report on it on this show, I want to see the entire women's round. And I feel like I get gypped a little bit, honestly, because what if there is a playoff and the playoff takes the entire segment in which the women are playing? I mean, how do you show any of the women's card at all?
Well, I will politely. I think it's just politely. I will politely disagree with you. And this is not to take away from the women at all. Like, but I think it's more a matter of what the Pro Tour, you know, said they were going to do this year. I don't think they didn't promise even coverage across the board the whole time. They promised trying to bring a compelling broadcast, and I think they achieved that, especially with the context of Paige Pierce is up by 12 strokes. And so when Paige Pierce is up by 12 strokes and Paul Macbeth's potentially only up by one at that point or whatever it had gotten trimmed down to, I think they're going to go with the storyline just as if it had been, you know, the opposite. If FPO would have been closer, I think we would have gotten more. That said, I do know they plan to try and maybe work in a little more split screen. You know, there were some times I think they went to some more leaderboards and stuff than they could have or should have. And maybe they'll go to a little more split screen coverage. The nice part is, I will say, you know, they did have, next day on FPO. So I think that was a solid that all the next day FPO still came out. And like, GK Pro got 42,000 views on round one. I was shocked. It was great.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think I understand where you're coming from. But I think with the live broadcast, you want to make sure that you can bring the most excitement possible. And I know that, and I'm not trying to sound rude, but Paige Pierce being up by a dozen strokes is not as
exciting. I get from that. That was this instance, but what happens next time when the broadcast is set up in the same way, and maybe there's like some boredom happening on the MPO side? I mean, I guess that they would just switch over to the women. I mean, but you're not going to get just pure excitement from hole one on the women's side, so they're not as compelled to just start prioritizing the women's round over the men's. I don't know.
To play devil's advocate, I'm just curious then. So like, what do you think is more valuable? Is it having 13,000 people on the live stream and seeing the women's coverage, or having a dedicated women's stream that would potentially have, you know, 4,000 or 5,000.
I guess I just want to see the entire, I guess my whole thing is I just want to see the entire women's round, but I appreciate that they're getting next day coverage out. That's obviously a plus. And I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but it seems like more people may want to consume the content that way anyway, because it's not as long and drawn out for some of these longer rounds. It's cut, you know, no commercials, anything like that. But yeah, I guess the other thing is, like you said, they were putting up leaderboards when maybe they could have cut over to the women. Maybe it's a different camera scenario where at one point they ran a really long commercial when they could have, and I was like, come on, I want to see the women. And it's because they had to switch their camera over to the other side of the course. Well, maybe there's some efficiencies that can be created to make sure that there's no lag time when they want to film between the men and the women.
Yeah. And I think I do know, in having, I talked to Jeff Spring a little bit today, and I know they are looking at some of that and
cool,
seeing what they can do to create some more efficiencies and, you know, chill a little bit more. So that's a good thing. And I think, you know, I think the ideal is eventually enough resources to go around and get those dedicated streams,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And I think at least 3 tournaments into this new style, I've enjoyed the broadcasts more in this fashion than I have in the past. Now, maybe there's a scenario where down the road they flip-flop it and they go women early, show almost their whole round, and maybe chop in on the men. I don't know. So that could be a way to fix things too. So we'll see. But I am happy to see them continue to improve the broadcast on the whole.
I agree.
So yeah. Sarah, real quick, before we get to our interview with Noah Meinsma, we have to get to our weekly Chris Dickerson segment presented by us. How did our buddy Chris Dickerson do this week?
Well, sadly, I took Chris Dickerson to win this week, and when he did not, he ended up tying for 8th with Drew Gibson, with 10 under par. I want to say he might have shot on average just under his current rating of 1042. We didn't get to see him on the coverage, so I don't have real insight into what he was, you know, what he was doing exactly, other than what we can see on UDisc.
Looks like a little bit of an uncharacteristic putting showing.
Yeah.
For him, you know, 78%, 24th in the field. He's generally a little cleaner on that one.
Maybe it's just,
you know, he doesn't rust. He's, but what is, because he's
right.
A robot. He's got rust.
Right.
But I mean, OB rate wasn't too bad compared to the rest of the field. You know, didn't quite connect on as many circle two bids as he usually does. No circle two bids in round one, which usually he's good for a stepper or three. So, you know, it will be interesting to see if he bounces back this weekend at the Preserve. Hey, good call on Calvin. Top 5, though.
Yeah.
Right, wasn't he your top 5 pick?
Yeah. He's the only one that gave me any points.
That was a good one. That was a good one. So that was the weekly Chris Dickerson segment presented by us. And we'll see what Chris does this weekend up in Minnesota. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will chat with Noah Meinsma about his performance this weekend. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, joining us on the show now is Noah Meinsma, coming off a 5th place showing at the Dynamic Disc Open and a USDGC qualification. Noah, congratulations on the showing. How's it going, man?
Awesome. Thank you. It's going really well. I'm excited to be back in Minnesota and starting the next leg of the Disc Golf Pro Tour kind of restart season.
Yeah, man, it's exciting stuff. Let's talk a little bit. Obviously, you know, you and I have crossed paths a couple times over the last couple years. You've been kind of touring on and off, but I feel like maybe you haven't hit that quite household name in disc golf territory yet. So kind of give, for people who are just getting to know you and are tuned into the show, you know, give us a little of your background. Kind of what's your disc golf origin story? How'd you really get started with the sport?
Well, I got started just playing locally at parks by my house with family and friends at a young age. And I actually looked online to see if there was competitions of people playing disc golf within like 3 weeks of playing. And I stumbled upon a tournament, a C tier. I ended up playing the first 3 weeks, an intermediate. And it was quite a experience to see all the people hanging out together, trading discs, you know, talking around. And I just really fell in love right away with the competitive scene.
So you just went straight in to tournaments.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I actually played tournaments before a league even.
No way. Wow, yeah. Man. I mean, did you have a background in other sports that kind of gave you just the immediate like competitive drive? Because I know there's a lot of people who get intimidated by tournaments.
Yeah, definitely. I used to play baseball a lot, skateboarding all the time, basketball, football, just pretty much anything I could do to hang out with my friends outside. I was about it.
Okay. I mean, did any of those skills from like baseball and other sports really kind of translate over into disc golf for you?
Yeah. I think so. Just like, you know, obviously just basic throwing and, you know, getting in athletic positions and, you know, carrying things into disc golf that I've learned from other things. But
So you jump into a C tier straight off the bat. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, where does it go from there? How does it get to the point where, you know, you're now a 10-20 rated pro touring the country?
Yeah, well, I guess another person that's really crucial I met early into is Airborne in Cale La Vista. He opened up a store right down the road from my house, and I would be in there putting every day. Then I would play his disc golf league, his putting leagues, you know, later on play his events. And he was just a really helpful person to meet in the scene.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, how important is that Minnesota background? I mean, there's really, I feel like Minnesota is kind of unheralded sometimes in terms of the amount of players it produces. You know, who else besides Cale has really helped push you to kind of get to that level?
Well, back in the day, I used to play with now Terry Roethlisberger, who started the tour a lot recently now. And we used to play with Alex Geisinger back in the day too, before he kind of settled down with the family. And that was a really good group of guys. We used to travel around and go play small C tier or a doubles match, maybe 2 hour drive in the Minnesota area every weekend for okay. You know, two seasons about.
Yeah. Terry Roethlisberger also getting the USDGC qualifier same weekend as you.
Yeah. Yeah. That is awesome.
It's awesome, man. So, you know, we had, you know, you went out, you started the early season, have all this downtime from kind of the quarantines. What were you getting up to while everyone was kind of at home? Were you back up in Minnesota, just kind of hold up, or what did you do during all the downtime?
Yeah. No, I was in Minnesota the whole time. I took advantage of playing a lot since the courses were still open in the area. So I usually played BRP leagues at Blue Ribbon Pines once or twice a week when their leagues were back open. Otherwise, Cale's course in Clearwater, now the preserve that everyone is heading to this week. I've been up there the last, you know, 3 months, probably working on it and practicing and playing every day. So it's been a really good break.
I was hoping you would say that so we could talk about it. I'll ask you about the preserve in a minute, but let's talk about kind of jumping back into the season. Then you go, things start back up and you come out to the Majestic, which, you know, kind of a should be a borderline like home field advantage for you. But you ended up coming in 45th. What happened? What was going on at the Majestic? Was it rust or what do you think really went on that weekend?
Well, the Majestic for me is such a unique personal tournament. It's just, you know, the really first big event I've ever played, and I've played every year in my disc golf career. And I really, really, obviously everyone wants to win tournaments, but I that tournament is something really special to me that I really, really wanted to win. And so after things started really not going my way, I still just kept pushing to try to, you know, jump up spots and with the elements and just me not playing well, it all kind of spiraled into a series of unfortunate events in the final round. But I didn't really know exactly how out of hand it was getting. You know, it really was a reality check for like, hey, I got to have more of a game plan going into a tournament. And I can't just be thinking about the win. I have to think about the shots and just like selecting everything in the moment, which obviously it's easier said than done.
Yeah, a little bit. It sounds like it was a little bit of a humbling kind of tournament for you.
For sure.
Completely. But then you turn it around and you go from 45th there and you come back and you finish in fifth at the Dynamic Disc Open. So, I mean, it seems like you learned your lesson. What were you really, what was working for you in Emporia this last weekend?
Well, Emporia, I really wanted to stick to a game plan of trying to limit my damage because I know that the wind there, you're going to have bogeys and you're going to have some bad shots. And it's really hard to save par if you go out of bounds and in bad places on that course. So I was really taking my medicine. If I was going out of bounds, I'm just going to make sure that I play for par here. I'm not going to get too aggressive trying to throw a shot that I could put me out of bounds again two times in one hole. So I didn't end up taking any doubles or triple bogeys the whole tournament, just a few singles. Which was,
a few single bogeys and your OB rate was eighth in the field, which for how many people are going OB at this tournament, pretty solid. It looks like your circle one in regulation stats were pretty strong too. Is it, is there an adjustment for you? Like you, I think Minnesota and I think Woods and, you know, and I know you've popped off at De La before. I remember, was it last year or 2 years, 2 years ago, right?
2 years
De
La ago.
And then you ended up being final round lead card over on the golf course.
Yep.
So how do you take that experience of, you know, playing in Minnesota, being mostly in the woods and then coming to Emporia where it's, maybe like one hole is wooded. Right. What kind of adjustments do you have to make to really be able to play successfully there?
Yeah, well, I still try to incorporate a lot of my Minnesota style of shots into the ball golf style course. So like a lot of fairway drivers like T-Birds and Thunderbirds, I really want to try to stay like with less movement in my shots. So I will try to pick the slower disc to not, you know, go out of bounds right or left as much like that. And then that'll help me kind of like relate to throwing the woods because my disc as well, you want to stay straighter down the fairways in those types rather than playing the big wide sweeping overstable disc.
Okay.
Shot.
Hey, do you have to like, do you stand on the tee boxes there and like envision trees in your head? Does it go that far?
Yeah, no, it definitely doesn't go that far. But I definitely, a lot of my form and throw is based on a nice flat pull. So to try to hit hallways and things like that. So it's easy to get back out there and just get my flat throw going on.
Nice, man. I mean, were you, were your expectations this high for the Dynamic Disc Open?
My expectations, honestly, were I heard that there could be some big media presence and I was really excited to try to just play my best game to get on to, some like a cool CBS Sports broadcast or Jomez video or something like that and ended up getting on to some coverage. So that'll be really awesome to watch.
Awesome, man. So you're a younger guy. You're what, 22?
22, yep.
So, I mean, does playing in front of the cameras, does that rattle you at all? I mean, I know you've done it a bit, like we talked about with Masters Cup. I know you've done some Minnesota stuff. Like, how do you, how do the cameras impact you? Or do you just kind of forget about them?
Yeah, no, actually, I feel like I'm a person that I enjoy the cameras more being there to film me. I'm more excited, and it gets me into my state of mind that makes me want to play and entertain. So I feel like when I'm being filmed that I'm going to rise to the occasion. And if I'm playing good golf and everything goes well, then I'm going to play better than if I wasn't being filmed.
Okay. Nice, man. That's good. So I like that kind of attitude. I like the players who play up to the camera instead of getting scared of them. You know, it can be easy to get scared by the camera.
Sure.
Let's talk about this weekend. Obviously you're back up in Minnesota. You've got the Preserve Championship. How far is that from your house? Like, is this I know, Minnesota's got 50, 70 million courses in the area, but right. You got to drive a little bit, right? Like how close are you to home this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, while I'm home from tour, I'm staying at my sister's house, which is in Anoka. And that is actually in the middle of Blue Ribbon Pines and Clearwater. Pretty nice. So those are the two places I've been playing the most. It's probably about a 50-minute drive to Clearwater from Anoka.
Okay.
Which isn't too bad considering the cities. It's like an hour and 20 minutes maybe from the cities, but
okay.
It's so awesome to hang out there. It's almost like a disc golf mecca of just all these people hanging out every day. It's a really weird, interesting, unique vibe.
I was going to say, give us some insight. Cause like this is, I'm super stoked for this tournament because just the photos I've seen and what I've heard about this course, it sounds amazing, but I haven't seen it. I haven't been there. Like, can you kind of paint a picture for people of what they're going to be getting themselves into this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a really big, it's like 110 acre about property, and it's snuggled up between the side of the hill here. And then the other side is the Mississippi. And in between, they have like, it's pretty flat with a few rolling areas that have some nice greens from the ball golf course that was there originally. And then some built up infrastructure as well, like retaining walls and things like that. A lot of bunkers from sand and probably like 7 to 10 ponds as well.
Oh, wow.
So it creates a lot of natural obstacles for the disc golf course to go around.
Okay. Is, you know, what's your thinking? Is this going to be like power guys are going to dominate, or does it, you know, I think of kale and I think precision, like, is it a good mix? Like what kind of shots are people going to need to fare well here?
Yeah, no, it's a great mix. It's the par fours are really going to force you to throw a certain line off of the tee. So you're either going to be throwing a power hyzer, you're going to be throwing a turnover driver, you're going to throw a straight driver through a gap. So it's crucial that you get good distance, but it's not crucial that you threw it as far as you could to get birdie. So it's more about hitting the line and getting good distance, maybe 400 feet to 450 rather than 550 feet wide open and trying to go par four 900 feet. It's only 700, but it's a technical par four.
Okay. And then what's, you know, I mean, it's a golf course and I, you know, we were just on a golf course over the weekend. Are we talking as open as Emporia, or is there some good use of some of the trees that maybe exist on the course already?
Yeah, it's definitely uses the trees a lot more than Emporia does. It's got it's got more to offer in that area as well.
Okay. What would you say is like, what hole do you think would be most significant, either just from aesthetics that people will remember or shot wise that is really going to be kind of a turning point?
Yeah. Well, since I've been gone the last 2 weeks here, I haven't played the combined layout, which is what the preserve layout is going to be. It's a combination from both the courses, as well as maybe some new tees and greens. But there's definitely hole 18 of the normal Timberwolf course. I know it's going to be used for one of the layouts or one of the holes in the layout. And that is just incredible hole. It's maybe a little over 1,000 feet. Throwing over two ponds, the first shot, the whole pond, it just slowly gets bigger to the right. So the more distance you bite off, the more chance you'll go into the water. And then the next shot is another over 500 foot shot to clear to try to eagle it to go for a three on the par five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you can make some decisions here. You can lay up to a lot of different spots.
That is kind of what I'm gathering is like, it's really going to make people think about, you know, how risky they want to be, right?
Yes, I agree completely. It's a lot of risk reward. And the wind there comes into play more than any other course in the Minnesota area, I think, because it's so open and it does have a lot of water coming off of the lake or off the river as well.
Okay. So I don't even think of wind when I think of Minnesota, but it can get a little windy.
Yes. Yeah. I've played there when it's almost like a Kansas day. It's, you know, 30 miles an hour.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now it looks like that 18th maybe is very similar to what, at least in the tournament layout, is going to be similar to that one that you mentioned. It's 930 feet, par five, couple water carries. Mm-hmm. That should be quite significant. What's your goal going into this weekend? Because obviously you're home, there's got to be a little more distraction, a little more pressure, but you are coming off of the top five. So where's your mindset going into this tournament?
Yeah, no, I would just love to stick with my same game plan of staying, you know, inbound. There's not as much OB at this course, so I want to be a little bit more aggressive, but I'm making my putts more as well this weekend. Last week, I had so many opportunities, and it worked out well because I didn't need to convert all those opportunities, but I feel like here I'm going to need to convert a few more, and the scores are going to be a tiny bit better.
Okay. Now, there are several Minnesota players, obviously, in attendance this weekend. I'm not counting all of them because there's too many in front of me, but give me your like sneaky Minnesota player who could potentially pop off onto like a lead or a chase card that people might need to look out for.
Oh, some sneaky Minnesotans. Well, I do have a few that I think about here. Some locals in the area. My good friend that just came down to Dynamic Discs Open, Louis Laporta, actually. He's 960 rated, but just averaged 1,010 or so at the DDO last week. And
okay.
He also won a C tier the weekend before that, and he lives about 10 minutes away from the preserve. So he's been there more than anyone else I've seen probably that plays in the area.
Okay.
So I can
if yeah.
Top 30 weekend.
Okay. And give me one more.
One of my other really good friends who's a younger guy from up that area in St. Cloud as well. His name's Aiden Guthrie. He throws really, really far, and he plays on Team MVP. And he's definitely a really good spinny wind putter as well. So I could see him popping off a good weekend as well.
All right, man. I like it. You know, what's the outlook for you for the rest of the season? You know, we get past the Preserve here and then we move to Michigan and Ledgestone and other stuff like that. What are your plans for touring the rest of the year?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be at most of everything. I don't think I'm going to Idlewild. He's the only one I'm going to be missing. I'm going to be playing one of my favorite events of the whole season, the Lake Superior Open. And then after that is the Cedar Creek Open. So those are two Minnesota, Wisconsin events that I will be at in Minnesota area instead of like, Idlewild.
Instead of Idlewild, yeah.
But I will be at Ledgestone, Great Lakes Open, Silver Cup is next week, Massachusetts for Maple Hill and things like that.
Okay. You guys kind of have an embarrassment of riches up in the upper Midwest there. I mean, I know you have a lot of cold and snow for much of the year, but you guys also just have a ridiculous amount of quality courses. What's your top course up in that region that like you can drive do in a day?
Yeah, no, we're actually a lot of this little off-season 2.0, I've been hanging out at Mount DeLac Resort, which is in Superior, Wisconsin, just south of Duluth. And it is just amazing. The views that you get off of there, there's three courses, there's cabin rentals, a little swimming area. And it's just one of my favorite places to go hang out and just practice.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, one thing I like to do before I let people go when it's their first time on the show, Noah, is I like to put them through the lightning round. So I'm just going to throw a bunch of quick questions at you. I want you to give me the first answer that pops in your head. Does that sound good?
All righty. Sounds good.
All right, man. Let's do it. So first one is favorite course on tour.
Ooh, I'm going to say Beaver State Fling Courses.
Okay.
Driver.
Most difficult course on tour.
Ooh, probably Eureka Lake or Northwoods Gold, both of those.
Okay. And then this is my favorite question. Most overrated course on tour.
Ooh. I would say a lot of people would say Memorial, but I really like Memorials, like history and vibes. Waco is it's fun, but I feel like it could be changed up a little bit, the layouts, and that's kind of, I feel like maybe I would say my answer would be Waco instead.
Okay. Best food on tour, like city or restaurant that you're always looking forward to that you can get to somewhere in the year.
Oh man, I love going to Cali and going to SFO and going to Chinatown and eating all the dim sums and bakery items they have and just spending like $5 and being so full.
Love it. Awesome. Okay, more difficult hole. GBO or I guess DDO 16 or USDGC 17.
Ooh, definitely USDGC 17.
Okay, is it the nerves almost factor more room. Just where it is?
The nerves are at both, but I feel like there's just more room for error at Winthrop. You can take seven so easily, but DDO, you know, you can four, maybe you can six if you mess up like.
Sure. Okay. What was your best score on 16 this weekend? I don't have it in front of me.
I went all the scores. I went 2, 3, 4 on it. Back to even.
Gotta run the gamut. I love it. Okay, yeah. A couple more for you. Let's see here. If you were gonna pick any sport to either watch or play besides disc golf, what's it gonna be?
Ooh, dang, that's a good one. I really do enjoy watching skateboarding because I feel like it's so similar with the style aspect like of disc golf. Everyone's kind of carving the fairways just like they're carving the skate park or the street setting in different ways. So
okay.
We all get along and like do the same style, but everyone kind of does it a little differently.
I feel like I saw you with some pretty sweet like skateboard looking kicks over the weekend. Was that you? Were you wearing some like...
They're pretty great.
Yeah, man. You got to tell me about these shoes now that I think about it. Give me the lowdown. What kind of shoes were you wearing over the weekend?
They were called Nike Metcons.
Okay. So are they normally skateboarding shoes or are you like a sneakerhead?
No. They're like a trainer is what they're called.
Okay.
But I definitely like my sneakers for sure.
Nice, man. All right. These are the real hard hitting questions. This is why you come on PDJ Radio for the hard hitting questions about sneakers. All right, if you were going to be able to have any superpower, what would it be?
Ooh. I mean, honestly, probably flying, so I can fly around to all these places that I like to go.
Yeah, that's the winner there. All right, if you were not a pro disc golfer, what would you be doing?
Oof. I don't know, actually. I mean, maybe probably some type of sales, like talking to people and hanging out with people and, you know, getting to know something that I really enjoyed and getting it to all my friends.
All right. I'm going to throw this random one out there. Who's the best skateboarder on tour since you're a skateboarding guy? Who's out there who could tear it up?
Ooh, man, there's not a lot of people that like to skateboard anymore on tour because they were all scared of, you know, getting hurt and not being able to play disc anymore.
Sure.
But I do have some good stories of skating with Matt Bell originally. The first time I met him, we played a game of skate and we both were just hitting all of our tricks first try. And it was very entertaining and fun. And
That's awesome.
Wide open, I think, in 2014.
Okay. So, I think he's going to be up at the Preserve this weekend. Maybe you guys can rehash that.
I actually drove by him on the freeway on the way back from DDO, which is funny because I don't even think he was at DDO, but I saw him on 35 coming up.
Awesome. Right on, man. All right. One person, living or dead, that you'd want to have dinner with?
Ooh. That's a good one. Probably Kurt Cobain, actually. That'd be a interesting guy to hang out with and have a dinner with.
Definitely. All right. You're trapped on a desert island. You can only watch one movie for the rest of your life. What's it going to be?
Oh, one movie. Man, people give me a hard time usually around here about my movies because I am very behind on them. But a classic one that I've seen so many times would probably be like The Lion King, maybe.
Okay. All right. All right. Good. And this is the last question. Cats or dogs?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to say cats, especially with tour. It's so easy to come home to them and they still always love you.
Good man. Good man. Well, Noah, thanks, man. It was a pleasure getting to chat and always love seeing you get up on the leaderboard, man. Do it again this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Steve. Appreciate it.
Of course, man. All right. That was Noah Meinsma, and we'll be back in just a moment here on PDJ Radio.
And now we're going to do our Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds.
Alrighty.
Of the week. Man, they were some really, I feel like I say this every week, but the hot rounds on the women's side were outrageous. 3 out of the 5 hottest rounds were all 4 digits. That's pretty spectacular. And a couple of them were not in the United States. So that's also amazing to see that. Yeah. So the 5th hottest rated round was from Evelina Solonen. And she shot a 986, her 3rd round to take 2nd place at the Prodigy Disc Pro Tour 2020 in Helsinki, Finland. Super happy to see her name back on the leaderboard, back at the course. The next was Valerie Mondahano. She shot a 987. Man, she's getting super good. At the Greater Houston Disc Golf Championship, driven by Innova and presented by Gorilla Disc Golf in Houston. And she shot that her 3rd round to take 1st place. She's one of those people that, like, she's got to get back at these bigger events, and we need to see how she stacks up. I think if she gets a little bit more experience on her belt, I think she's going to be just, like, blowing up.
It looks like she'll be at Ledgestone as the next real big one for her.
Okay, cool. I'm excited to see that. The next is Missy Gannon. She shot a 1,004, her 3rd round to take 2nd place at the Dynamic Discs Open.
I believe that was the 2nd or 3rd highest rated of her career.
I think 2nd. I read 2nd? That in your article. Yes.
I couldn't remember the stat that I looked up yesterday.
I know. And then I was like, what was her first highest rated? Man.
It's like 1019 or something like that.
It's crazy. The next was Hannah Blomroos. She shot a 1009 at the Prodigy Disc Pro Tour 2020 in Finland. That was her 3rd round, and she took 1st place over Evelina by just 1 stroke. So happy to see that they're battling again. I'm sure they're also totally pumped about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then the hottest round of the weekend was Paige Pierce, shot a 10-16 her 1st round to take 1st place at the Dynamic Disc Open.
Ho-hum, just a casual 10-16.
Just a day of the course.
Yeah, very cool. All right, on the MPO side, we are not going to be at the Dynamic Disc Open to start. We're going to be at the Magic City Mega Bowl. Sponsored by Dynamic Discs out in Birmingham, Alabama. This one's an A tier. This one came from Logan Bowers. He shot a 1069 rated 2nd round. Ended up coming in 9th place, so maybe struggled a bit the rest of the tournament, but nicely done, Logan. Now we're at the Dynamic Discs Open. Emerson Keith and Kevin Jones with their 1071 rated 2nd rounds were the 4th hottest of the weekend. Emerson Keith came in 3rd place, and Kevin Jones tied for 6th. Alongside why can't I remember who Kevin Jones tied for 6th with? My brain is not working. It was Eagle. Thank you. Gosh. Ah, one slot out of that top five, Eagle. Yeah, darn it. Oh, well. All right. Third hottest rated round goes to Florian Lingenhell. And this was at the Lake Park Trophy 2020 in Austria. Shot a 1076 rated final nine, we think, Sarah. Is that what it's looking like?
Yeah, most of the scores were in the 20s, so I'm assuming.
I'm guessing that's a final nine. Yes. Yeah, and Florian tied for third place. Nicely done. Getting some tournaments over in Austria. Okay, second hottest rated round, Mr. Calvin Heimberg. That was his 1083 yesterday, 10 under par. I think it should have been 11 million rated because of all the wind. Yeah. But either way, he came in second place. And actually, Paul McBeth should get the two top slots here. He shot a 1084 in the second round and a 1085 in the first round. And he's very good at throwing the frisbee. He won the Dynamic Disc Open because that's what he does. The hot rounds, as always, are brought to you by Birdie Fuel Coffee. If you go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com, use the code PDGARadio at checkout, you'll get 10% off. Sarah, what are you drinking today?
Hot round, of course.
There you go. Perfect. All right. So thank you again to Birdie Fuel Coffee for supporting the show and supporting many, many of your favorite touring players who you might get to see this weekend.
Yay!
At the Preserve Championship, another Disc Golf Pro Tour event that we've got on the schedule. This is going to be up in Clearwater, Minnesota. For those of you who maybe recall, a few weeks ago, we had Disc Golf's most handsome man, Cale Leviska, on the show to talk about this place, the Preserve. Sarah and I were just looking up some photos. If you want to go over to UDisc and type in Black Bear, it's like one of the courses at the Preserve, I guess. Or I don't even know exactly what the layout is because there's Lynx and the Timberwolf, whatever. Either way, it looks stunning. It's along like the Mississippi River, ton of trees, used to be a ball golf course. I was talking to our buddy Matt Kruger from UDisc, and he's been up there already. He kind of gave me the lowdown. There's some really, really big water carries if you want to get aggressive, like 300, 400 foot water carries if you want to try and get some birdies. He said it's like a little bit like Fox Run Meadows without the mountains in the backgrounds. There's three holes that are kind of wooded, 11, 12, and 13, that play along the river. He said there's like bald eagles and stuff.
Wow.
Sounds amazing. I'm super stoked about it. That one is this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it's going to be over your 4th of July weekend. You're going to have to take a break from lighting things on fire and blowing up your fingers to watch. But personally, I think it's going to be worth it. It looks pretty nice. Now, it's interesting. I'm seeing that Paul McBeth is registered, but I thought he said at the end of the tournament yesterday that he's not playing this one, that he's going to Deagle. Hmm. So now I'm confused.
All I remember him saying is that he wasn't originally going to play DDO. He was going to start.
Right.
He and Paige both said that they're going to start their events or their season 2.0 later.
Right.
I don't remember him saying that he wasn't playing this, though.
I could have sworn he said he wasn't going, but maybe he is, I guess.
Maybe he did a switcheroo.
I don't know. He's on the docket, so we'll put him in the picks. That's fine. You know, he's registered and ready to roll. It's, again, a lot of the field carrying over. This is only like an 8 or 9 hour drive, I think, from Emporia. We do get to see the return of Garrett Gerthy, which is going to be exciting.
That was another person we were just talking offline about a bunch of people that weren't there. And notably, so Jessica Weiss, Vanessa,
Van Dyken,
yep. Who else? Oh, Ellen Widboom, of course. There are a bunch of people.
Sarah Hokum,
yep.
Yeah, the women's field's going to be, Lisa Fakus is going to be at this too.
Right,
a couple more, Madison Walker.
Right,
so a few more of the top women's players are going to be at this one. And then on the MPO side, we're getting the addition of several people who were not there this weekend. Anthony Barella. Looks like Nate Perkins is going to be back. I think he was a late scratch from DDO. Matt Bell. Right, Matt? Was Matt Bell out at DDO?
No,
I don't believe
he was one
there.
Of those people that wasn't able to get there. Chris Clemens wasn't able to get there because of the quarantine rules.
Right.
One thing, okay, I'm totally backtracking. Brody Smith, DNF'd after his second round.
Oh, from the DDO. Yeah, he was feeling the effects of the Lyme disease, which is not a thing that you want to be feeling the effects of. So hopefully he's on the mend. And I guess technically that meant that when you laid it up, you laid it up correctly.
I didn't,
but he shot a 10-18 over.
I know,
man.
Yeah.
He shot really well. And then
impressed.
I think it was just
foot and mouth.
The conditions were really hard.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's feeling better. But yeah, you know, quite a few people, Adam Hamas, Matt Oram. This field is more stacked than the Dynamic Disc Open field, which is saying a lot because that field was stacked. So I'm really, really excited for this one, Sarah, because I think for me, the biggest thing with this tournament is it's a new venue, like entirely. And I love that we have the National Tour. I love that we have the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but we've seen most of the same events just in different times on the calendar or minor changes to layouts and holes and stuff. Like, it's been a while since we've gotten an entirely brand new tournament on the tour. You know, we would have had the Texas State Championships this year. And, you know, I'm bummed that we didn't get that. But, like, was there anything in 2019 that wasn't a repeat event? I think most of those events we'd had already on both the tours. Oh, there was Portland Open. Portland Open was new. I'll give Portland Open a new one. So I just get stoked when we get to see new venues and new tournaments. And this one just looks stunning. So what are you looking forward to the most on this one?
I mean, I was going to tune in anyway, but I think it's equally as exciting for me to watch a course that I've played just to see. I mean, I have no idea what I threw at the country club, and the course is quite different from when I played last time. But it's exciting to watch people play some of the holes that you're familiar with. But I think it's equally, if not more, exciting to watch an entirely new venue, like you said. And I don't know, it's still kind of interesting the way that tournaments have to operate now because of COVID. I mean, the sanitizing and the spraying and keeping distance from each other. And
now this one's, I think, going to be a little looser than the DDO because Minnesota has been a little less restrictive. So I think there will be some spectators. However, they're going to be like led by a group leader, if you will, and only allowed in certain areas. So the Pro Tour is handling that kind of stuff. Okay. So I understand now why it's called Black Bear.
Okay.
So basically there are two courses normally at the Preserve, the Timberwolf course and the Lynx course. This course, Black Bear, is a combination of the two to make it like a super Pro Tour layout.
Gotcha.
So it's coming in at like over 10,000 feet. And Sarah, I just sent you a link to the caddy book.
I'm looking at it.
You will see there's quite a bit of H2O on the maps.
That is where it is not like Fox Run.
Yeah, that's true. There's only that one hole at Fox Run that has water. And I think for Pro Worlds, we didn't even play that hole. They had to move it. But I'm already counting like two or three water carriers here, and I'm only on hole 12. So it's going to be right. Oh, I love it. OB on hole 12, OB is the Mississippi River.
Love it.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, we're running right alongside of it. I think you got to shank it pretty bad on some of these holes to get in the Mississippi River, but there's definitely some little water carries, and you know, I don't think there's going to be quite as much elevation, but man, it looks really nice. It ends on a 930-foot par 5. Where you potentially can have two water carries. So
nice. That's
awesome. I'm really excited that I've said that 17 times. So let's
really excited.
Yeah. You will be able to see this live on the Disc Golf Network for the first two rounds. Final round Sunday will be on Disc Golf Network and YouTube. And then for this one, Sarah, we didn't even get to talk about this CBS Sports thing because that broke after the show. but so without belaboring the show too much longer, this tournament gets us back into the usual post-production mix. I believe it's Jomez on lead, MPO, GK Pro on lead FPO, and I think Parsafe Productions might be there for the MPO chase on this one. We'll have a full article with the details up on that on the PDJ website later this week. But Sarah, you are first in the picks for this one. So what's your, without seeing much of the course, you kind of have to, we're kind of flying in blind to the picks on this
one. Yeah, I like that though. I could use some luck, honestly, because, all right, well, let me just go over the picks from last week. So you got 2 points for Paige Pierce, 2 points for Macbeth, 1 point for Katrina Allen getting top five, 0 for Eagle top five. I got I picked Paige Hsu and Chris Dickerson to win, so I got zero for them. Holly Finley for top five, zero for her, and Heimberg for top five, one for him.
Uno point. Good job.
And then our listener pick, unfortunately, got a goose egg for everything. So they picked Dickerson to win and Kevin Jones for top five.
Very close. But then we give them, weren't we just going to give them whoever got better FPO picks?
Oh, that's right. Point. So that's you. So they got 3 points for that.
Good job, listeners.
Yeah. So that puts you.
And hey, listeners, send us in some picks this week. radio@pdga.com. We want your picks for the Preserve Championship. We're putting this show out a little earlier this week. Send them in. Actually, no, wait, I guess we can't. We can't have their picks for the Preserve.
Because
we're slacking.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we moved too fast. Listeners.
We're sorry.
We're sorry.
Anyway, I didn't want to say this, but I will. You have 19 points. I have a mere 6 points, and the listeners have 10 points.
We got a little bit left of the season, so
I know,
it's okay.
I know. I have faith.
Well, and you get to go first this week. So why don't you lead us off with whichever division you want to make picks from.
All right. Well, I feel like there's two people that I can't not pick, and you got quite a few points from them last week, so I'm taking them. Well, the first will be Paul McBeth for MPO. And
that's easy.
Yep. Do you want me to do my top five?
Either way, just do whatever you want to do. You mentioned both picks.
Okay, and Paige Pierce.
Okay. So there we go. All right, then I will do my picks for both sides as well. I'm really looking at this list on PDGA.com, and DGPT sponsor exemption is very tempting to pick that person. I'm totally joking. So I really want to see Katrina Allen bounce back with the hometown vibe. So I'm going to go with Katrina on the FPO side. On the MPO side, it's really tricky because, you know, Calvin slayed it, but do we see him do that two tournaments in a row? You know, he went and won the Memorial, but then came in 10th at Waco. So a little bit of concern there. You've got James Conrad, who was almost nowhere to be found this weekend in the Dynamic Disc Open, which is a little disappointing. You took McBeth, which is good because, you know, makes my life easier not to pick him for once. No, I'm really just stalling. I think I want to see. I was really impressed. I thought Ricky Wasaki looked healthy. I thought he looked strong. I thought he made some really good shots. And he can handle these water carries. So let's go Ricky Wasaki to win it on the MPO side.
That's a good choice. We didn't even really talk about him that much. And his
he looked great.
Yeah, off the tee, he looked great. He was just having, I feel like it was just some bad luck on the putting green, or he was just missing like slightly low and
some odd misses for
yeah,
him.
Yeah. That's where he was kind of struggling on the putting green, but yeah, I like that pick a lot. Top five. Who's it going to be? I would like to see Sarah Hokum come from off season 2.0 and make a good showing. So I'm going to take her for my top five.
And, all right. And why don't you pick MPO? Yeah.
All right. I have to go Dickerson. I'm so loyal. Yeah. I'm like, I wanted him to win last week. He didn't. And so I feel like he's going to do pretty well. Just maybe not win, just top five.
Is he playing?
Oh, good call.
Kind of needs to be in the event.
Yeah, let's see.
He's not on the PDGA website. No. I don't know if he's somewhere else.
All right, fine. In that case,
is he on UDisc?
No, I was just assuming that he was playing and just hopeful that he was playing. Yeah. All right, in that case, I am taking Heimberg.
Okay, there we go. FPO top five. I'm going to stay on the Missy Gannon bandwagon. I'm going to say momentum stays in her favor and Missy Gannon gets another top five. On the MPO side, I'm going to go with a young man named Adam Hammes.
Ooh, nice.
Because he's good at disc golf. Also, Paul McBeth shouted him out last week. And if Paul McBeth shouts you out, you're on my list.
I saw that,
so
that Paul McBeth has been studying Adam's putting to tweak his own putting. I was like, man, that's pretty cool. Yep. That's pretty cool if you're Adam Hammes.
Yeah, very cool. So I'd like a top five showing out, Adam. We'll see how it goes. Again, you can follow all this on UDisc Live and, you know, Disc Golf Network. Should be a good time. Also, please be careful this weekend, people. I know people get a little goofy on the day of America's independence. And
remember the dogs. Just be careful. A lot of dogs are scared from fireworks.
Oh, my dog hates for the
I
dog.
Have... Hey, if this were a
you got the thunder
video,
shirt.
Yeah, if this were a video show, a visual show, then you would see my little dog Otis. He's in the bed to my left, and he's wearing a thunder shirt because it was a little bit earlier.
We've also got the thunder shirt for one of our dogs.
It doesn't really work, but I like to think that it does.
No, it doesn't work. You know, it works. They got some doggy CBD.
Oh,
that
we've
works
also tried
well.
That for one of our other dogs who has car anxiety and.
Maybe we could get ourselves a doggy CBD sponsor for this show.
I love it. I love it.
Anyway, one last reminder, PDGA elections start this week. Keep your eye out for an email from IntelliScan. If you don't get that email like Wednesday, don't fret. Apparently they roll out in a couple of phases. Also, happy Canada Day on Wednesday to all of our Canadian listeners.
Yeah.
Because... I just really want to get the song Let's Go to the Mall by Robin Sparkles stuck in your head. Do you even get the reference I'm making right now?
I know I've heard of Robin Sparkles, but I'm not sure what the song is.
It's from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh my gosh. I knew that sounded familiar. I love that show.
Yeah. Robin Scherbatsky was a teen pop star called Robin Sparkles. And she did a song called Let's Go to the Mall in which she says, I'm going to rock your body till Canada Day. That's the only thing I can think of on Canada Day. Oh, also, since we're talking Canada Day, that is the day of wide release for Throw Canada, the documentary where we had the creators on a couple weeks ago. So do yourselves a favor and watch that on Wednesday as well. Sarah, you got any shout-outs?
Yeah, but we also have not done our Runder Layup segment.
Oh, I forgot.
Who are you? I don't even know you anymore. All right, I'll start off with mine. Emerson Keith is underrated and about to pop off, which is very funny because now I feel terrible for not... Is he signed up for the Preserve? Yes, he is. Yeah. And now I feel terrible for saying that he's going to pop off.
But... Sorry, I'm laying that one up. And here's
I'm not.
Why. No, but here, listen
I'm
to
listening.
Me. I'm laying that up because he has already arrived. Sarah, were you... Pro World.
I know, but...
Last year... Emerson Keith was a thing. I shouted out Emerson Keith as a possible pop-off finisher at the Dynamic Disc Open.
I know you did. But
so in my mind, he's already here.
But I don't think that he has reached like household name status. If you were to go and poll 10 people who play competitive disc golf, but maybe not on the pro side of things, I'm not sure all of them would know Emerson Keith. And I think they all should know Emerson Keith.
I disagree.
All right, well let's do an informal poll.
But that's fine. You're
I'm running it.
I'm laying it up. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. I like this one, Sarah. All tournaments should start with tee off music.
So if you like it, that means you're running it.
I run that
one
all day.
Yeah. I totally agree. What
although I kind of want to pick the music because
No,
these
that's
dudes
what you,
on the lead card.
What you do.
These well, they pick their own songs.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to pick the songs
for
them.
Oh, okay. That could be distracting then. I feel like that would give people some complexes. Like, why did they pick this for me? Do they think that I
don't know,
like
but I didn't like any of those dudes' songs.
Yeah.
I'd never heard any of those songs. I'm probably showing my age. I hadn't heard any of those dudes' songs for the final round.
Well, I just came up with a great one. So, historically, I've chosen Three Little Birds by Bob Marley. And then I just...
How does that get you pumped up to play disc golf and throw that 1,000 foot
It gets
hole?
Me chill. Oh, well, I'm not talking about that hole specifically, but it gets me like chill and in a happy mood. I just chose my tee off song for Music City Open this year, and I chose Dancing in the Moonlight by Top Loader. Dancing in the Moonlight, everybody.
Oh, that's by Top Loader?
Well, maybe it's a cover, but that's the version that I like.
I don't know. I've never heard of Top Loader.
But now I just said Spice
Girls,
definitely
heard
and
that
I'm
song.
Thinking that I should have... Maybe spice up your life.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a solid one. Now I'm showing my age.
Yeah. That's okay. I would have chosen like Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue or something like that. Be a good one.
Yeah.
But that's also that would have been when I was like 6 years old. So I'm not that old. All right. Our next runner layup. Paige Pierce will win all of the Disc Golf Pro Tour tournaments this year. Run it or layup, Sarah.
I'm going to run it. Like, she's just...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Someone's got to take... There's. I don't know who's going to take her down. There's lots of people that are, like, right on the cusp. But there's just no stopping her when she gets in that mode. I don't know if you saw this, but during round two, I believe, hole nine, the hole that throws out of the chute and then comes around 180. And she did this, like, incredible putt from her knee, completely stretched out, downhill.
Like, yeah, eagled it.
Like, ridiculous. Yeah, an eagle. Like,
yeah,
ridiculous. Like, a putt that should not be made on pure hyzer the whole way. Nobody makes those putts.
Nope. I know. It's, I got to run that too. Like, I know I called earlier in the year, bold predictions, Heather Young going to win a DGPT, but
she's got to get out there first.
I may have to backtrack that. I think Paige is just, you know, it's a bummer, honestly. Like, I want to feel confident in other women in the division. I hope we can start to change that, but I don't want that to be because Paige starts to slip.
Right.
I want it to be because everybody else elevates their game. So that's what I would like to see most.
Well, Heather Young, I mean, it starts to be a numbers game, and Heather Young hasn't been out to, you know, she wasn't out this past weekend. She's not
playing. We're half the season.
Right. So I feel like if she were able to get out there a little bit more and boost her confidence and get comfortable playing on the pro side with cameras and all of that, I think she could easily take it down. Like, her putting is unmatched, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say she does have a distinct advantage there.
For sure. All right.
All right, last one.
Calvin is the next world champ, not named Macbeth. you go.
That's a hard one.
You go first on this.
All right. I came up with this one. Look, I watched Calvin Heimberg, and I see nothing in that, like, he is...
Stone-faced.
Unshakable right now, and that is the same quality that Paul Macbeth has. Paul Macbeth has that,
no emotion.
That second level of being able to just entirely separate from that moment and just operate. And there are very few players who have that right now. That being said, I am going to lay this up because it's too hard for me to think that someone like Eagle McMahon couldn't be the next world champion, not named Paul Macbeth, or you know, that Ricky Wysocki could win another one because he's shown that same level of shutting it down. But I mean, it's Calvin's right there.
Yeah.
I really do think we are on the verge of something very special with him, just because he has that ability to just go just mindless in the best possible way.
Yeah, I'm also going to lay this up. There's just too many people up there at the top. There's too many, not to say that, I mean, I guess the question is kind of framed this way, but I just think if there is anybody that can knock him off his Paul Macbeth tower, I mean, there's multiple people that can do that at this point.
But I think it's a short, I don't know, I think it's a pretty short list.
I mean, okay, so Heimberg, I think Dickerson totally could. Emerson Keith totally could.
He tried last year.
That was one tournament, 1 year.
It was Worlds, I'm just
all
saying.
All right, he doesn't have as much
experience. I think there's like 5 to 7 people maybe. And that's on their... playing at their absolute peak. And again, it's kind of the same thing we talked about with Paige. Like, there's just such a significant gap right now between the top player in both divisions. Like, you know, Macbeth's got what, 20 ratings points over the next closest right now? Macbeth's 1061. Okay, 13. Sorry. If we're looking at the preserve, Macbeth is 1061 rated, Eagle McMahon is 1048. You know, that's significant.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I do think out of the top rated players right now, I think you could make a case for Eagle, Ricky, Calvin.
I'm throwing Emerson and Dickerson in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to agree.
I don't know. No, that's okay. I look, it's a good problem to have though.
Yeah.
But I just want to see, I want to see these guys and women just elevate to the level of Paige and Paul. And I hope that they get there, because that's just going to make the game better than it already is on the pro side.
For sure.
So, all right. Now I think we're done with the show. Sarah, do you have any shout outs?
I have one shout out to the PDGA, actually. When I was looking up the hot rounds for today, I noticed on several events, but the one that I was looking at was the Magic City Mega Bowl. So now if you go to that event page, you'll see where it says show round ratings. Right next to it, there's a new link that says show scores, round scores. And this is for when a tournament is scored via PDGA Live. So just like UDisc, you can go on and see all the whole scores from each round. And I think that's pretty cool. You can go back in and see how people did on each hole.
Yeah, man. Our tech team, Steve Gans, Pete Crist, Mike Crist, these guys are always grinding and doing something in the background, and then they just drop something very casually. They don't make a big fuss about
like
it.
Easter egg.
But then people right. just discover it. Yeah, that's kind of how they operate. But yeah, shout out. They're always working really, really hard. And it's nice when they can just give members more little bits and pieces to rely on. Again, I want to remind people one more shout out to get on board with the hashtag PDGA Colors campaign. I'm already looking. I've got some old PDGA member stickers on people's cars. I've got someone with, 12 renewal tags.
Ooh.
So, you know, get on board, people, and you can get a PDGA membership for next year and get one to give to a friend who has not been a member before. So thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week after the 4th of July. Right. Be careful, people. Don't light yourselves on fire.
Good, clean fun.
Take care of and you know, remember, like I say this as someone who lives in California where it's
dry,
almost always on fire. Please don't light things on fire. That's it. Just be polite, but have fun. Stay safe and sane. Happy 4th of July. And we'll talk to you soon. So, for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This is PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you soon.